Hello and welcome to the Make Money Your Honey podcast, a show dedicated to everything millennials, marketing, and money. My name is Amanda Abeya, Amazon bestselling author of Make Money Your Honey and award-winning millennial money blogger. Thanks for joining us. Now let's get to the show. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 33 of the Make Money Your Honey podcast. Today I'm coming to you with Grant Sabatier of Millennial Money. Some of you guys may already know him. He's the guy who went from having $2 to his name to over $1 million to his name in 5 years. He was actually a millionaire before he was 30. He runs a very popular blog, Millennial Money. He's been featured on CNBC, who actually dubbed him the Millennial Millionaire. He's working on a bunch of cool stuff, like books and just so much. And in this episode, we actually dive into some of his advice for people who are just getting started investing. We talk about his story, because you know I had to ask him how the hell he went from $2 to over $1 million in 5 years. We talk about entrepreneurship. We also talk about his possibly controversial view on emergency funds and how much you should have in cash savings versus investments. It's a really, really fun episode, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Make Money Your Honey podcast. I am so psyched to bring this guest on for you guys today. His name is Grant Sabatier, and some of you may know him from Millennial Money, and he has this awesome story of how he literally went from like $2.26 to his name to over $1 million in just 5 years. So that's a pretty big jump, and we've gotten some requests about investing and how to get started. I know some of you have some fears about that. So thanks, Grant, for coming on and sharing your story with my audience.
Yeah, super stoked to be here, Amanda. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to the chat.
So for listeners who may not know who you are, can you give them like a quick rundown?
Yeah, sure. I'm Grant Sabatier. I'm the founder of MillennialMoney.com. I'm dubbed the Millennial Millionaire by CNBC. My personal story, 2010, the age of 24, woke up broke, unemployed at my parents' house, had really sort of pillaged through a number of jobs right after college, just couldn't find the right fit, and really had a reset back then at the age of 24, and really completely redesigned my life to really try to make as much money as possible. Learned a completely new skill set at that time, taught myself digital marketing in about 60 days using YouTube videos, went from knowing not a lot about it to being an expert pretty quickly, landed a job at a digital agency, making about $50,000, and then spent the next year at that digital agency learning everything that I could while also building out my side hustles. And I went from $50,000 a year income to $400,000 a year in 1 year during that time period. And from there, left the full-time gig, launched three different companies, two of which I still manage, and reached financial independence by the age of 30. And Millennial Money is really kind of my passion project. Where I've been writing for the last couple of years, and it's really started to explode and take off. Just signed a book deal with Penguin, so working on a book about really how to make more money in an increasingly gig-driven world.
Yes.
And I'm excited to chat and share that with the world. So,
my audience is going to love you. So I actually looked you up, and I kind of binged on a lot of your articles on your blog.
Sure.
A few weeks ago. And I know that a big part of your financial journey and your journey into financial freedom, which for anybody listening, and if you don't know what the definition of financial freedom is, because I know it gets thrown around a lot, it's basically when you're covered, you're good. Like the money you've got coming in from passively, probably through investments, whether it's real estate or index funds or what have you, lots of ways to invest, basically covers your living expenses and you don't have to work, right? Am I right?
Yeah, totally. So yeah, work is just optional. So basically, I have enough money where, I could effectively live off the interest, for the rest of my life. But interestingly enough, a lot of people confuse it with early retirement. So financial independence and financial freedom are different than early retirement. I'm busier now than I ever have been. It's just the choices that I can work on passion, projects that I'm passionate about, and I'm actually working harder than ever. But since I'm aligned with kind of my personal passions and mission, you know, not only am I a lot happier, but, you know, it's interesting. Money has become the byproduct. So Millennial Money started as a passion and quickly went from me just launching a blog to now the blog makes about 30K a month.
Wow.
Just in, you know, affiliate ads and those things. So it's funny how following what you love, money can be a byproduct as well.
I mean, that's what happened to me. I like fell into blogging kind of like you. I had to kind of get my shit together in 2010 and I had to teach myself about personal finance and it turned into my career. Go figure.
Yeah. Look at us, right?
Look at us, but that's how it happens, right?
Yeah. Totally happens.
On your blog, you talk a lot about investing. I mean, you even go through your entire investing strategy. I devoured that post. We will have it in the show notes, everyone. I oftentimes get a lot of questions from people. Usually when someone finds out that I write about money for a living, the first question I get is, oh, so what stock should I put my money in? and I'm like, ooh, that's kind of not how that works. and also, there's like this general fear. It's like a not understanding really how it works and also like this fear of losing money. And I know a lot of listeners in my audience are kind of in that space. Like they want to get started, but they're kind of terrified, you know, because a lot of them came of age when everything was a mess. So it makes sense. So what advice do you have for those people who like want to get started, but there's kind of like that emotional thing stopping them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a few things. First, just starting small. You know, you don't have to dive in. There's so many tools now where you can just start investing literally with like $10. So start small, see how you feel, ease into it. I always recommend, you know, don't buy stocks first. You know, get into an index fund, you know, start putting a little bit of money away, see how it feels. And one of those, you know, emotional barriers, that's why I'm such a big proponent of saving daily, just because when you save daily, not only does it become a habit, but you see the growth. You know, it's just like working out every day or doing anything every day. You know, when you start seeing results, it really gives you more motivation. So, you know, when you're saving, say, $10 a day, you know, for a month, and all of a sudden you're like, wow, you know, the money I've invested has made, you know, $50. Wow, I made that $50 just from a few clicks. You know, that really helps to lower that emotional barrier. The other thing is, you know, don't invest in anything that you don't understand. So there's just an infinite number of ways to invest money. But a lot of people, the fear is like they just don't get it. And there's a lot of predatory people out there that try to sell you and get you to invest in things that are just like, if it's too complicated and you don't get it, it's not the right investment for you. And then the third one is, you know, don't invest what you can't afford to lose, with the caveat being, you know, a lot of people think it's kind of all or nothing. They view investing as like, you know, playing craps or, you know, playing blackjack
gambling,
or something.
Yeah, they think it's gambling. Yeah.
But, you know, it's really not. And then, you know, the worst case scenario, like think even in like 2007, 2008, the stock market dropped like 30 or 40%. No one lost all of their money. You know, it wasn't a Bernie Madoff situation. So say you had $100 invested, you lost 30 or 40, you didn't lose it all. So, and the crazy thing is a lot of people who lost money back then, they took all their money out and put it in cash.
And they've missed out on so much money. I tell people that all the time. I'm like, a part of me wishes I would have started in 2000. I was still in school in 2008, so I didn't know any better, I guess. I was like, damn, if I would have started in 2008 when I was 20 years old. So I actually started using your method. You brought up the saving every day. I actually started trying that a couple weeks ago when I found your blog. You invest 50. I'm starting with like a dollar a day and just like automatically it's going, right? And I plan on like working my way up. You were actually at a point, I don't know if you still do it, but you were investing $50 a day. So what are actually some of the ways that people can sort of step up their investment game? Because I feel like, you know, the automating thing is great, and I obviously automate the bare minimum of what I can put in there to make sure at least that goes. But I feel like, you know, sometimes if I just leave it at that, then I kind of half-ass it.
Yeah, exactly. I think the automatic, I think there needs to be a hybrid sort of automatic and manual. Like you can automatic sort of deposit money into your 401k. And I just had a post that came out yesterday about kind of the 1% early retirement strategy, how, you know, if you just escalate your savings 1% every 3 or 4 months, you know, you can retire probably 10 or 15 years sooner. So you should check out that post. But
yeah, Paula Pant talks about that too. I think she calls it like the 1% challenge. And that I've actually done that, right? Because I was the type of person who would just dump as much as I could. And then I wouldn't leave enough money for myself to, like, you know, live.
Actually live. That's awesome.
But then I was like, okay, you're going a little overboard. This is not working. You're actually super stressed, right?
Yeah, but when you spend 5 minutes a day and you know, we're naturally sort of, you know, it's really tough for us, and I'm going to write about this a lot in my book. It's tough for us as humans to really think about money and really think about the future. You know, conceptualizing like we need to save millions of dollars, or conceptualizing even saving five figures of money, is actually very hard for us. But when you think about it every day and you use that daily strategy to your advantage, you know, you can really have huge gains. Not only does it motivate you, but literally spending 5 minutes in the morning, and I still do this when I'm having my coffee, I spend 5 minutes taking a look at my balances on my investments and really getting myself in the mindset of, okay, today, you know, I'm going to invest what I can and I'm going to try to make more money to invest. And when you do it every day, literally, like, I'm as crazy as, like, I think I found $5 like a month ago, and I immediately thought, when I found the $5, of the future value of that money.
Wow.
And what I did is I literally stopped and I invested that $5. And that's just the mindset that I'm in. And same thing with side hustling. Like, imagine, like, you know, gosh, it's so funny because, you know, I'm a millionaire, but someone in my building asked, like, they were looking for someone to watch their cat for the weekend for $60. And I was like, oh, I'm hanging out for the weekend. I'll do it, because I knew that $60 I could invest. And literally that's the mindset that I took from the beginning. When you wake up every day and you're like, you know, what are some other ways I can make extra money just so I can invest? It starts to become a lot of fun. You know, it's like, I'm not into video games, but in some sense it becomes like a game, and it's real money's at stake, and it starts to grow. And once it starts to grow, you're like, whoa, I want to put as much into this
right.
as possible.
It's addicting. Money is addicting. Like, once you start, not in a bad way, right?
Totally.
But when you start, and I tell people this all the time, like, when you start learning about it, and when you start, you know, learning from people who really understand it, and you start seeing the kind of like the fruits of your labor, like, it does actually become a little addicting.
Yeah, it totally becomes addicting. It's a positive addiction.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like doing anything for 30 days. You know, once you get the hang of it, like, I still do it. I'm still doing it 7 years later. I still invest every day. I mean, I miss a few days, but the mindset shift, the cool thing is, a lot of people, they only invest like every 2 weeks or once a month. And if you miss one of those 2 week periods, you have to wait a whole nother 2 weeks. But if you're doing it every day, if you mess up one day and you forget or something, you have the next day to do it again. And so, you know, you don't lose out and kind of miss out. Because a lot of people, it's like, oh, I'm going to save what I have at the end of the month.
Hi guys. So this is the part of the interview where my internet connection went down. Damn you, Skype gods. So we're actually going to pick it right back up where he starts talking about how most people wait until the end of the month to save and invest. Here we go.
Yeah, so I still save every day, you know, 7 years later. And a lot of people make the mistake where they only save money every 2 weeks, say when they get a paycheck, or even once a month. And that's one of the problems with that, is if you don't save during that 2 week period, you naturally wait to the next 2 week period. And all of a sudden, you've missed out on 2 weeks of opportunity. Whereas if you're saving every day, if you miss one day, you can pick it up the next day. I mean, I'm human like anyone else, and I make mistakes. Like, sometimes, you know, even though it's a habit, I'll still forget. It helps that it's a ritual with my morning coffee. So if I'm drinking coffee, usually I'm thinking about money in some sense. So those two are aligned. But I messed up some days. You know, I got my phone stolen not too long ago, and so I do everything on my phone. So it's like, all right, I'm going to skip this day. But the thing is, I can pick it up the next day. And if you only save every 2 weeks or once a month, or especially if you wait towards the end of the month, you know, it can just cause huge problems, just because a month goes by and then another month. you know, like, oh, I didn't have anything to save this month. I didn't have anything to save last month. But when you're thinking about it every day, you know, you take it one day at a time. It makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, and I think it's also a true testament to the fact that even little amounts go a really long way. Because oftentimes people, when I talk to them, you know, they're just like, oh, but don't you need to like have a ton of money to do that? And I'm like, no, not anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And it adds up. The thing is, a lot of people are like, you know, I think a lot of problems with like even personal finance blogs or calculators is that the assumptions that are built into them is that, you know, you're going to do something consistently over time.
Right.
So like, what's the impact of saving $5 a day? You know, it doesn't necessarily add up to a ton. If you save $5 a day for 30 years, expecting 6% compound annual interest, you'll have about $177,000 in 30 years. So that's still a sizable amount of money. But imagine if just half that time you increase that daily savings rate from $5 to $10 a day, all of a sudden you have like $350,000 or $400,000 saved. So it's one of those variable things where if you think about it every day and you just try to save as much as you can, that's really where the compounding impact happens. And you also get the benefit of dollar cost averaging, which is the simple idea that, you know, the stock market's always fluctuating. And so some days, if you buy every day, sometimes it's going to be low, sometimes it's going to be high. But naturally, you know, you're consistently getting your money into the market, you're going to benefit over the long haul.
So I want to get your opinion on emergency funds, because I know you have a very specific opinion about emergency funds that tends to kind of contradict a lot of the you know, personal finance advice that's out there. And basically, you make the argument that you could, you know, invest that money and then make a return. And then you offer up some suggestions in case people run into an emergency. And like, I'm not going to lie to you, I've considered doing it, but it makes me a little bit nervous. Like at the end of last year, for example, in 2016, I just focused on investing. I like dumped whatever I could into ETFs. And by the end of the year, I was like, oh, well, my liquid cash savings kind of suffered here a little bit. This is making me kind of nervous.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, like, at any given time, I never have more than $5,000 cash on hand, period. And I've been that way since I started investing in 2010. And it comes down to opportunity cost. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to take care of an emergency. And when you're someone like me at my, you know, stage in life, it's like I have so many diverse income streams and a lot of cash flow that, you know, it'd have to be a huge emergency to really throw me off. I mean, there's just, I know that cash is consistently coming in, so I'll be able to cover something this month, maybe next month, without you know, it crippling me. With that being said, you know, I'm a huge fan in just like even your Roth IRA, for example. You know, if you get in such a dire financial situation, but you've been saving in a Roth IRA, you can take out all of your contributions, the principal, tax-free. And so that's one of the things where, you know, if you're saving consistently, maxing out a Roth IRA, you know, your emergency fund, instead of leaving that $5,500 in cash this year, putting it in a Roth, if you do run into emergency and you need it, you can just pull it right back out. But if, you know, if you don't, and a lot of people don't end up needing it, then it's in, you know, then it's invested in something and it's growing. So a lot of cases is like, I've never needed an emergency fund over the last 7 years. And if I would have kept that money in my emergency fund, you know, I think the bucket that I deemed my emergency fund, if I had left it there, I would have missed out on about $150,000 of gains over that period.
Yeah, and I think there's also something to be said maybe like for personality, you know, or what your specific situation is. Because like you said, you've got money.
It's all specifics.
It's all specifics because you've got money coming from like different places. And maybe I've got like $7,000 now in an emergency fund and that's what makes me feel comfortable. But I also know I've got some stuff coming up that's going to need to be paid for, like pets going to the vet, which is not cheap.
But that's not an emergency in my opinion. That's just a general life expense. And, you know, emergency fund is something like, you know, you have a medical situation or you really need to help out a parent or a friend or something that, you know, you just know, or maybe, you know, your cat does get into something and they need $2,000.
Yeah, that's what happened. They got into something and they had to like, they had two that had to go and then that money came out of the emergency fund. But then like, for example, if I oversave for taxes, which I have a tendency of doing, right, then...
Oversaving? Oh man, we need to be friends because I... I have such a problem. It's so hard. It's so hard.
It is really difficult. I basically like. I mean, I'm a pain in the ass. My poor accountant, right? But like, but basically, I was like, okay, I hate being in situations where you like just come up short for like quarterly taxes. So I'm like, I'm just gonna sock away. Like, you know, my accountant has me like just sock away this much of everything, and you should be fine, right? And it's true. I usually end up like way over saving. Like this time, I oversaved by about like a grand, right?
So wow.
Like, yeah. So half of it is going to be like, okay, well, I know I've got this stuff coming up, so half of it has to stay with me, and then the other half's going to be invested.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just an opportunity cost. So it's like, what is feeling safe worth to you? And in that case, you know, that $1,000 over the past year, depending upon what you invested in it, you know, at most you could have doubled that money and made $1,000. But your just assurance, like your feeling, your emotion of security was totally worth that. Not making that $1,000. However, I would say there are conservative ways to invest your money instead of just leaving it in cash in a checking account. And that's a mistake a lot of people make too. You know, at least putting it in some balanced bond index fund like a Vanguard, Wellesley, or Wellington, or, you know, something with a 60-40 or 40-60 stock bond split. You know, you're going to get 2-3% a year, which at least will keep up with inflation. Whereas if you just sock it away in a checking account, you know, you're just throwing away money.
Yeah. So moral of the story, guys, just there's no one size fits all formula, number one, but you can't have all your money sitting in a checking account either.
Yeah. And the thing is, test yourself. And I think a lot of people with money, they get so rigid in their ways, they're not willing to push themselves to see how they feel. And the thing is, like, money is just an infinite concept where, you know, I say this, it's like, you know, it's the same principles around trying to make, you know, $5,000 extra dollars versus $1,000,000 are actually pretty similar. But a lot of it comes down to kind of the intensity of implementation. And money, it's all about emotion. It's just what you feel comfortable doing. So for me, literally, if I had money sitting in a checking account, you know, I'd feel anxious about that. I'm like, oh, what am I missing out on? What am I missing out on? Or for me, I actually feel a lot more comfortable being in the market, taking some risk, and having my money grow, even if there's potential short-term downsides. Literally, every dollar I invested in 2010, every single dollar is worth $3.25 today.
Yeah, which is, again, is a testament. And I tell people all the time, I'm like, because they're afraid to invest, I'm like, if you look at the data, it's actually a pretty solid thing. You know what I mean? Like, and then I'm like, a lot of people just like throw their money, and we'll get to business stuff. But what I've noticed is people are more comfortable throwing a lot of money into like business ventures that have like a 90% failure rate than they are investing in the market. And I'm like, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And a lot of things, a lot of it like comes back to your point around emotions. If you're afraid of investing and losing, you're afraid of investing and losing something else in your life as well. You know, a lot of our emotions around money are actually representative of emotions around other things in our life. And so when you actually start to manage your money well, get a handle on it, start to take risks, manage risk, I think it not only makes you a more confident person, I think it leads to a happier life as well. Because I think we as humans, we're happiest when we're growing, when we're challenging ourselves. And when you're just conservative and you're stuck in a bubble and you're kind of in your comfort blanket, yes, you might feel safe, but when you're not growing, you know, and not testing yourself, you know, I think it, you know, you're not as happy as you can be.
So you actually also have some really great stuff on student loans. Most of my audience is dealing with student loans. Some of them have very significant student loans. And I've actually made the argument that paying down your loans really quickly, which is what a lot of them want to do, isn't always the smartest move. And I know you kind of tend to agree with that too. And I think there was an article on MSN or CNBC about that recently as well, because mathematically it may not make sense. So why is that? And then, you know, how can people determine whether or not they should either really aggressively pay down those student loans or perhaps, you know, ease off the gas pedal on those a little bit and put some money toward investments?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, a lot of it comes back to emotions. If you're just crippled by your debt and you wake up thinking about it every day and you have a hard time emotionally handling it, just paying it down or starting to, you know, either get rid of your lowest balance, or I think obviously the smartest financial decision is to start tackling the highest interest rate debt first. A lot of people don't refinance when they should. That's one of the reasons I write a lot about it. It's just like there's people out there that want to take over that debt, and they're going to give you a lower interest rate, especially probably over the past couple of years. If you've been smart with money and your credit score has gone up, you can get a much more favorable rate on your student loan than you probably currently have. So don't leave money on the table, and definitely refinance, you know, if you can. And at the same time, if you can refinance for a rate that, say, is like below 5 or 4%, maybe even below 6%, in a lot of cases, it makes more sense to take your surplus income and invest it in the market in an index fund, as opposed to just putting it all towards student loans. So I'm actually a big proponent of, say you have an extra $1,000 a month, which I know is tough, but you know, say you have an extra $1,000 a month, put half of it towards your student loans and invest the other half, because you can be paying down your debt while building your net worth. And over the long period of time, you really want the value of that compounding interest in the investments, that the cost benefit or the benefit of that is going to be greater than even paying down your student loan. So I've run tons of scenarios where, in a lot of cases, if your student loan debt is, say, less than 7 or 6% interest rate, it makes more sense to invest your extra money into investments, because over the long haul, the value of that dollar could, you know, double or triple. Say in 2010, spending that extra money I had, you know, if I put it towards a student loan as opposed to investing, I would have paid down my student loans, but I would have missed out on the opportunity for my investments to literally triple in growth over that period. So it's an individual decision. It's a personal decision, but don't just assume that you need to pay down your debt before you start investing. In a lot of cases, it makes sense to do both at the same time.
So you've also mentioned meditation. As you can tell, I literally binged on all your content. and I was really excited to see that. I've been meditating, I think, since 2011, when I discovered like yoga. Yeah. And then I tell people all the time, like I've said it in interviews, that it does actually help you with your finances. And when I tell people that, they're like, huh? What? How? Like, do I have to become like a monk and go to an ashram? Or like, you know, like we're not understanding the connection here between or they think it's like, oh, are you just like visualizing a ton of cash in your bank account? I'm like, no, not exactly.
No, not at all.
So how have you personally found that meditation helps you with your finances?
Yeah, it's a great question. A lot of it comes down to, you know, making more money and being smart with money is just about making good decisions. And to make good decisions, you just have to have a clear mind. And there's a lot of ways, like, you know, all of our bodies and minds are unique and individual. So it's all about kind of calibrating that and finding your right balance. I'm someone who, you know, I move literally 150 miles a minute. You know, I'm an intense person. You know, I'm working on something, you know, 100 hours a week. I'm always creating, building new things. That's where I'm my most inspired, is when I'm building and creating things. But I understand, and I've learned from myself, that, you know, I always say you need to chill as hard as you hustle. You know, you need to counterbalance.
That's a tweetable right there.
Yeah, chill as hard as you hustle. I actually have it trademarked.
Get that on a t-shirt or something.
Yeah,
like.
I know. But you know, but it's true, because the pendulum swings both ways. So, you know, you're going to blow yourself out, and you know, the harder you work, the more difficult it is to think. And obviously things like, you know, I made a lot of sacrifices over that, you know, 6-year period of going from nothing to $1 million. I mean, honestly, I didn't treat myself that well. You know, I gained probably probably like 30 or 40 pounds. I, you know, had trouble sleeping. I was just so intense that, you know, honestly, I sacrificed a lot more than in retrospect I needed to. And so a lot of it's been recalibration. I've been meditating for the last couple of years. And the ironic thing is that the meditation and the yoga, and I'm super into green juice, it just keeps me calmer and I make better decisions and I'm a lot more productive. So when, you know, when you're kind of in that flow state, or you're a lot more mellow, you know, you can get a lot more done. You know, you're not anxious, you're not distracted, you're not dealing with emotions that are counterproductive. And honestly, the cool thing is, like, scientifically meditating, it actually rewires your brain. So it creates new neuro pathways that actually not only help you think better and quicker, you're actually going to have better ideas in a lot of cases. And so it's scientifically proven. It's not, you know, psychobabble, you know, or new age crap. You know, it literally rewires your brain. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, that, you know, it doesn't work. But just literally try to meditate for 20 minutes and do it for like 2 months, and you will literally feel the difference. It's that profound.
Yeah, and for anybody who wants to get started, I've been using the Calm app. You can get it in the iTunes store.
Yeah, Calm is so dope.
I love Calm so much. I'm like on a 70-day streak. I don't know what my longest streak is, honestly, of doing it every day. I think this is the first time I've ever actually tracked it. Yeah, Calm is dope if anybody wants to check that one out.
So dope.
And in my experience, for me, I find that meditation helps me not react so quickly. You know, like if something happens, right? Like, I don't know, like my email is exploding, or like yesterday we had an instance where like the email went out from the wrong account, or like stupid little things like that can sometimes take people out, you know?
Yeah.
Or like
an
editor emailing you or whatever. Like, I'm not as impulsive with my reactions. And I have found that the same thing happens when it comes to like money management. Because if I'm in my feelings all the time, then I can't make the best decisions for my business, for my money, for anything really. So
yeah, it also helps you. I mean, this is one of the things too, you know, having a positive relationship with money is obviously so important. And when, you know, meditating helps you disconnect from that a little bit and helps you realize kind of what's important. It helps ground you. And the whole thing is, a lot of people are really unhappy because they're so driven by money.
Right.
And, you know, I was actually in that space for a little while myself. And one of the things about meditating, it's good to just disconnect, feel grateful. You know, I'm a huge believer that sort of gratitude and empathy are pathways to sort of happiness and honestly building wealth, because when you can actually start to appreciate what you have, then the extra things that you make, the extra money that you make, you don't use it in your own life. You just reinvest it, or you reinvest it in yourself. And that's one of those things that meditation, it just helps you disconnect and really appreciate, you know, what you have. And when you appreciate what you have, it's amazing how many more opportunities open up to you.
Okay, so you talk about the importance of entrepreneurship. You mentioned it a little bit earlier. It's also all over your website. So a lot of my audience, they're interested in the side hustling thing. They're like, hey, Amanda, we see you and all your friends and all your colleagues, and you guys have been doing this full time for a while, and you're always making more money. And, like, you know, they've been following, you know, our journeys for a while. And a lot of them are at a point where they're like, okay, I want to give this a go, right? So how can people get started on this path if they aren't already doing it? And for those who are already on that path, how can they do it better?
Yeah, no, those are huge questions. You know, one of the things is, you know, you can't expect results without investing really a lot of effort for probably a 4 to 6 month period. And one of the biggest things is building any business, just like building wealth. You know, everything that you do today, the decisions you do today, they're going to compound over time. And that's one of the things why it's so important to start a business, or, you know, so important to invest in relationships when you're young. I call it kind of the compounding interest of life, because literally, just like a business, if every minute that you spend and every hour that you spend focused on the right things today with your business will repay you back 3, 4, 5 times in the future. So that's why it's really important. A lot of people, they have anxiety about starting a business, but really the most important thing is just momentum. momentum. It's about creating that positive inertia to get started. So just a simple example, like the Millennial Money blog, you know, I started as a fun side project in 2015, but I understood this concept that every decision, for example, I was making around SEO was going to compound over time. So I did what it took. You know, I spent, gosh, just to launch, I built the site myself and I launched it. You know, I probably spent a good 100 to 200 hours building out the platform, creating a content strategy, creating a whole plan. And some people today, you know, I get, you know, 350,000 visitors a month now, and people are like, oh, how'd that happen in 2 years? How, you know, what happened? How did you do that? And it's all because I invested in the right way at the beginning. You know, it's not like all of a sudden in a year something just clicked. It was that I was like literally building a fire out of the kindling. And a lot of people, I think my biggest piece of advice is for someone who's getting started, first, read a book. It's called Blue Ocean Strategy.
Oh, it's a good book.
Yeah, Blue Ocean Strategy, it's amazing. And I think when you read that book and you start to understand, and you know, you go into anything with you know, after analyzing the market opportunity. And I think a lot of people, they just start things. They jump in and they're like, I'm going to do this because I'm super passionate about it. I'm super into it. But before you jump in, spend, you know, 30 or 40 hours analyzing who are the competitors. You know, how am I actually going to be different? Do I have something unique to sell? Do I have a unique story? And if you can't answer those questions, you're not going to be successful. You can't just jump in and do something that someone else is trying to do. And that's the biggest mistake a lot of entrepreneurs make, is they're like, they try to live someone else's life, or they try to create some other product, and they don't think about what makes them unique. And that's the whole idea around Blue Ocean Strategy, is creating something that doesn't exist, or at least figuring out how you uniquely are going to play in that environment.
Yeah.
And the other thing is,
I call it figuring out the angle. Yeah,
figuring out your angle and then committing to it. And then a lot of people, they just don't build a strategy. So I like to reverse engineer things. So it's like, where do I want this to be in 1 year? And then what do I need to do every month, you know, going back from that period to actually make this possible? It's the same thing as managing money. Say, I want to be a millionaire. Okay, to be a millionaire, how much money do I actually need to invest over the, if you want to do it in a year, how much money do I need to invest every month? Okay, I need to invest $80,000 a month. Okay, that's not going to be possible. Okay, so becoming a millionaire in a year is not going to be possible unless I can invest this $80,000 a month. And the same thing with your business. If you want to get somewhere in a year and you don't build a strategy to get there, what happens is every day you wake up and you don't know what the best decision is to make. But when you have a strategy mapped out, and every decision before you make it, you ask yourself, how does this relate and align with my strategy? And if it doesn't align with your strategy, you need to say no. And a lot of people, there's just the reason they're not successful, or the reason their businesses don't grow, is because they make the decision in the moment. And they think that, I'm going to do a lot. I'm going to make a lot of decisions today. I'm going to do a lot of things. But if it doesn't align with your actual strategy and you're not executing against it, the chances of you being successful are going to be low, because there's always going to be another email to respond to. There's always going to be another fire to put out. But if you can stay hyper focused and make those decisions that align with your strategy, that's what really moves the needle. I know this is kind of like a little philosophical.
Well, it's kind of counterintuitive, but I can tell from experience, like whenever I have to check myself sometimes and be like, wait a minute, should you really be saying yes to that? Like, and it does make a difference.
Well, you say yes to a certain point.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that, you know, you have to say yes when you're getting started. You know, you have to say yes for, say, the first couple of months. And then you have to understand when to shift and say no. And when you shift to say no is when you've gotten to that point. You say yes while you're formulating the vision and while you're building the strategy. But once you've locked down that strategy and you have your unique angle, you have where you're trying to get, you've outlined the path, then you start saying no. Because everything that comes in that doesn't align with that, you can just say no. I mean, that's one of the biggest barriers to people. A lot of people just always say yes. And another thing is, you have to be really honest with yourself. And I think launching a business, I tried to launch three businesses before I had one that was successful. And, you know, it was hard for me to let go of some of them. And I think the biggest thing that people need to be honest with themselves about, you know, is what I'm doing actually unique? Another one is, and what I'm trying to do, am I underselling myself? So that's one of the biggest things. A lot of freelancers, like, this is my biggest pet peeve. Oh my gosh, all these side hustle posts. It's like, oh yeah, you know, start a, you know, side hustle on Fiverr, become an Uber driver, become these, you know, get on Upwork. But when you're offering the same thing as someone else and the only thing that you can compete on is price, you're offering a commodity product.
Right.
Selling $5, you know, $5 blog post. I mean, you can't make money that way.
I had an email come through the other day. It was a writer I met at an event. She's like, oh, I'm thinking I'm just going to like go to Upwork. I'm like, don't do Upwork.
Yeah. And don't be afraid to lose an opportunity just because someone's not willing to pay you for it. You know, right now it's like, you know, I'll do freelance blog posts. And when I first started doing freelance writing, you know, someone would offer me $200 and I would do it. And I would gladly do it. I was super excited. I was doing a bunch of projects, but now I've gotten to the point where the opportunity cost is so high. If someone wants me to write for them, you know, I charge them, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 per piece. And the thing is, I lose a lot of opportunities that way, but I do know that the ones that I get, that's what my time is worth. That's what, you know, I'm trading that time for something else. And then another point, you know, and I'm honestly getting to this point now in my own life is, you know, I'm making a lot of money in a lot of different ways that making money itself is becoming less important to me. You know, my time is becoming more important. So, gosh, if the me 4 years ago could see the me now and the fact that I reject money-making opportunities, you know, I would probably hit myself on the head. But you do get to a point where you're like, you know, it's just – I just need to sleep. Yeah. or I just need to, you know, I just need to say no to this. And the same thing happens even if you're just launching a business. Not every opportunity is a good opportunity if it doesn't align with your strategy. And that's the real trade-off. Like if you're trying to launch a clothing company and you're also a freelance writer and, you know, you know someone offers you this opportunity to write 4 new articles, but you know it's going to take 10 hours away from you launching this company, you know, that's a really important trade-off. And a lot of people just go after the money, and then the money becomes a distraction to actually getting the business off the ground.
Okay, so last two questions, and these are the ones I ask everybody. So if you could only give one, I know you've given several already, but if you could only give one financial tip for the Make Money Your Honey community, what would it be? What's the one thing they have to do?
Oh man, this is a great question. I would say try to, and we go back to the kind of daily strategy, try to think about your money each day, every morning when you have your coffee or your green juice or whatever. Just do it for 2 weeks and see how you feel. That would be the one piece of advice. And one of the things is I honestly think that thinking about money on a day-to-day basis is the biggest opportunity that a lot of people are missing out on, just because our, you know, our brains aren't wired to think about money any other way. And the other piece of advice, I'm going to throw in a quick number two. Create what I call a sunny day fund, and a sunny day fund instead of a rainy day fund. Always have some money that you can just blow and not feel guilty about. So many people get wrapped up in this guilt around spending money. But if you're putting money aside that you have money to blow, maybe it's $20 a month, maybe it's $100 a month, but have some money set aside that you can really live and spend guilt-free. I think that's also really important.
Yeah, and it's kind of like when people do really strict financial things, they find that if they don't put in that flexibility, like, after like a month, they're just like blowing everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
exactly.
We're just not wired to work that way.
We're totally not wired to work
that
way.
Okay, so that it's kind of like a diet. Like you get on a super strict diet and then like you can't maintain it because there's no flexibility in it instead of seeing it as a lifestyle. Ooh, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I'm waiting for that final question.
I was like, I hear silence. I'm totally going to just keep that in the interview.
I'm focused.
Behind the scenes. Okay, so last question. And again, you've probably already answered it, but how do you personally make money your honey? out of all the things that you do, right? Let me reframe that, right? Out of all the things that you do and all the things you've done right in terms of money, what do you think has been the most effective and the most successful for you?
I think I know when to close the honey jar and put it on the shelf now. And that's not something that I've always known. The you of today is going to be very different than the you of tomorrow. And that's something that took me a long time to realize. So, you know, when I was 24 and all I could think about was money, I couldn't even begin to imagine where I'd be today. And that's the thing about money, is what you want money for today will change tomorrow. And money is simply a reflection of who you are, and who you are is going to change. And so be willing to be open with yourself about how your goals, how your desires are changing, and know when to, you know, sometimes close that honeypot, put it on the shelf, and revisit it tomorrow, because, you know, there's more important things than money, and make sure that you're not sacrificing, you know, the people you love, your health, and all those other rich things just in the pursuit of the dollar.
So before you tell the people where to find you, I actually wanted to tell you, I wanted to thank you, actually, because I, for like the last year or so, I've been feeling kind of like uninspired. I was like, oh, okay, well, I already kind of hit the goal I wanted to hit. Like, I run a business from my laptop. I travel whenever I want. I've got savings. I can invest. Like, I'm good, right? And it was really hard for me to kind of like go to the next level, because I'm one of those people who can't like make money just for the sake of making money. It doesn't work for me, right?
Yeah.
So when I actually found your blog and I started reading through some of the things, I was like, oh, I'm like invigorated. I'm like re-inspired again, because I realized like, okay, this isn't just about money for the sake of making money. This is like for my future self, right? And I actually started publishing net worth reports thanks to you.
Wow. Hey, that really means a lot to me. I mean, the real crazy thing is I spent, gosh, just six, seven years of my life just 100% focused on money. And honestly, once I hit, and this is what I'm writing about in the book, once I hit financial independence, literally like 100% of my brain opened up, and I became like, I was kind of an intense, not that I wasn't a nice person, but I was so driven, so intense that I really couldn't think a lot about, you know, more than myself. And honestly, this whole project has really been about, I've been so blessed. I've been able to do a lot of things. I have a lot to share. And I really just want to, you know, honestly impact people's lives. And just to hear that, it really means a lot to me, because that's so core to the mission of what I'm doing. And I'm happy that it had that impact on you, and that that's how you read my story. This has been a really great discussion, and I'm so happy to have been on the podcast.
All right, Grant, tell the people where to find you.
So you can check me out at millennialmoney.com, at millennialmoney on Twitter. Hit me up there, stop by, say hello. I read every email. I get a lot. You can email me at grant@millennialmoney.com. And hey, Amanda, this is a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for coming on. And it's true. He does really read every email he gets, and he's super chill, because this guy didn't even know me. And he's like, yeah, sure, I'll totally come on your podcast.
That's part of the mission. I love it. I love spreading the message.
All right,
so
guys.
Make money your honey. Thanks, Amanda. Right. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for coming on. Everyone, the show notes are going to be at amandaabeya.com/podcast33. You can also subscribe on iTunes. Thank you so much, Grant, for being on. And I might be forwarding some emails to you, because I know this is going to get a reaction from the community.
Hey, I'm happy to receive them, and I look forward to staying in touch.
All right. Until next time, guys. Cheers to making money your honey.
Later.
If you liked this episode, make sure to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes. And if you want more Make Money Your Honey, head on over to amandaabeya.com and sign up for the email list. You'll get weekly tips from me. You'll get every podcast episode I publish. And you'll also get a free money class sent directly to your inbox. So just head on over to amandaabeya.com to sign up for that.